Hi, I'm Brennan Trollinger for Optometry Times, and this is 10 questions for William Toe, 2016 Doctor of Optometry candidate, Western University of Health Sciences, Pomona, California.
Where did you grow up?
Well, I'm from the Bay Area, originally, San Jose, California specifically. Mm-hmm. Born and raised there, went over to UC San Diego for my undergraduates. Took a few years off between undergraduate and graduate school. I was actually an optician for a few years in between, and that's where that's kind of what pushed me in the direction of optometry. I learned a lot about the industry, the profession. Got to meet a lot of great doctors, representatives, all these amazing people. And it just it just made sense to go in this direction.
Well, that's actually my next question. What was that's good. I mean, what was it that led you from the opticianry to optometry?
The main thing is, I always knew I wanted to help people. I wanted to be in healthcare. Mm-hmm. It did take me a little while to figure out where in healthcare. And I actually was going in the pre-dental route originally, if anything. Mm-hmm. I worked at a dental office as an assistant during undergraduate, and I liked it a lot. But anybody who meets me, that one of the first things I'll tell you is I'm a big people person. I like meeting people. I like talking to people. And in dental, that's more of a one-way conversation, so it's not quite the same.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's what really pulled me towards optometry. It's just you really get to know your patients. You really get to grow up with them, and you're not always rushed to just get patients in and out. And I like the environment, and it really drew me towards that profession. The doctors that I knew, the optometrists that I met, there were a lot of great mentors out there. I was surrounded by a lot of positivity, which I think really made a difference in terms of pushing me towards the direction of optometry. And here I am. So I'm glad I met the people I did.
What was the hardest part of your OD school experience?
That's a good question there. Maybe just kind of getting back into that school mentality, taking a few years off. So, I would say first year was kind of a little bit, it was a little bit harder kind of getting back into that academic mentality versus, people who had just come straight from undergraduate or took less time off. But,
From a paying job to being paid in grades.
Exactly, being a poor student again with a lot of student loans, that really changes your perspective of things. But no, I mean, it's like I said, I don't think there's been any really hard parts. Sure, there are a few classes that are hard here and there, but I felt like the past 4 years, I've just had such a great time. I've been able to travel a lot, meet so many great students from different schools, doctors, like I said, all these people that are just so amazing that, just have been just such a great positive influence in my life. And I don't know if I can really say I've had any hard moments because, it's such a great profession that everyone you meet is just so amazing. And the entire process just worked out really well.
I forgot to ask this earlier on. How did you start off as an optician?
Like I mentioned to you before, I was actually going more in the pre-dental route originally.
Right.
And then, I graduated undergraduate, and my brother, who actually worked as an optician before, he told me that because, he knows me pretty well, obviously, being my brother. He told me, before you kind of go into that direction completely, you should try checking out the optometry world and try being an optician for a little bit. Because for him, he felt like that type of profession suited me and my personality a bit more. So it was at that point, I just kind of took a look at what was there, found a job down in San Diego. Mm-hmm. For a little bit before going back up to the Bay Area for another opportunity there. And like I said, everything just clicked and everything just worked. And, it's just one of those things that I took a chance and it just, everything worked out great. So I'm glad I did look into opticianry, and that's what pushed me into optometry.
What's something most people don't know about you?
Depends who you ask, right? No. what's actually really interesting is, I guess the people that meet me now, because I, like I mentioned, I travel a lot now, I attend a lot of conferences, I do a lot of leadership. I actually wasn't always like that. It's a little surprising. People who even knew me just a little bit before optometry school, I was born and raised in California, and I actually almost really never left California at all. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to. We have too much stuff going on there. It's a nice, beautiful place, which is why everybody else wants to be there. But, I never really ventured outside, kind of stayed in there, didn't really think about traveling too much. But then, like I said, getting the opportunity to meet so many people, it's like, wow, there's a lot of different places out there. So, I was a little bit more, if you had just met me just a few years ago, I'd be a little bit more quiet, more reserved, not as outspoken as doing as many things as I am now. So, I was a lot more quiet back then, I guess. So, and then you talk to people now, they say one of the worst things you can do is hand me a microphone because I'll never shut up.
You mentioned leadership training in school and things like that. So why should optometry students get more involved in optometry
I always encourage people to get involved in general because I don't think people just realize how small of a profession we really are. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are growing. We are, seems like we're constantly opening up all these new optometry schools, which I actually view as a good thing, even though I know a lot of people kind of view that negatively just because, I always tell them I'd rather they be opening new schools than closing down schools, because if they're closing schools, we're in big trouble. Mm-hmm. But either way, we're still a relatively small profession. I think just under 34,000 nationwide. Mm-hmm. When you consider medical has 20 times our numbers, dental has about 6 times our numbers, pharmacy has about 5 times our numbers. So, even relative to healthcare, we're a very small profession. And so, just to be able to network with people, to put yourself out there, to find these great mentors, like it's amazing how many people know people. Yeah. How many people, I talk to doctors who refer me to their friends who, like if I talk to a doctor from Denver who will introduce me to his friend in Florida who will talk about an opportunity in New York. And so you're literally talking about opposite sides of the country, but that's how great, that's how small, and that's how tight the profession is that we, because there's so few of us, we care so much about each other, we know so much about each other, and so any little relationship that you can develop with anybody, you never know where that can take you. There's so much you can do with it. So I do encourage a lot of students to get involved, get to know people. Try to get outside of your comfort zone, just because the opportunities out there are so endless. You never know what's going to happen if you just meeting somebody out there. You never know what can open up because of that.
What do you tell students who want to get involved in leadership roles?
I always tell them, think about what you want out of it, and don't just do leadership for the sake of doing leadership, right? You don't want to, for the most part, you shouldn't just be doing it just to add an extra line on your resume or whatnot, or your application. That is a benefit that does help you out. But at the same time, in terms of leadership, think about why you're doing it. Think about what direction you want to go. And, honestly, the opportunities are there. And if anything, we probably don't have enough people stepping up as leaders to just put yourself out there. Mm-hmm. And just seek out these opportunities. That enough tells me that you're a leader. You don't need a title, to show that you're a leader. So even if you don't happen to be the president of this club or you're the AOSA trustee at your school, that doesn't mean you're not a leader. There's a lot of things you can do which can highlight your leadership skills and to really help guide those around you to be better. And not just, something that's just a title on the resume there that may or may not help you down the line. People know who the strong leaders are around them. And it may not be the guy at the head of an organization or the top of a club, but, just if you go ahead and do what you can to help out everybody else around you, you'd be surprised what you're capable of doing.
What are your plans after graduation? I know you mentioned you're just on your fourth externship.
Next? that's a pretty big one too, just because I got a few things going on.
Okay.
Actually, without getting into too many details, because we could have probably an hour-long conversation about some of the stuff going on there, I'm actually looking into buying a couple practices.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah, right on graduation. couple places and a couple practices in the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. In just the past few months, actually, I've decided to go in that route. Even though I had a lot of different options out there, but you know, for me, buying a practice using the business skills, the practice management skills I've developed over the past few years, with the connections I've been able to make because of all the leadership positions and all the opportunities that I've done, seminars, workshops, things like that, I'm actually in a position where I can actually take over two relatively large practices relatively quickly after graduation. So, you know, kind of had to think about that because obviously very big things to take on right after graduation. But just because I'll be going for a business ownership or practice ownership right away doesn't mean I still am not developing my clinical skills. You know, it's all encompassing, right? We're always learning. We're always trying to be better and to do more to be better for our patients. So, you know, for me, I figured this is a great opportunity. I'm going to go for it. And if I have the ability to do it now, what's the difference between doing, purchasing practices now versus a year from now or 2 years from now? If I have the ability and the capabilities to do it now, I'd rather get a head start and start growing in all directions rather than just one aspect.
What is it about private practice that interests you more than, say, research or getting into industry or teaching?
Everybody's different. So, you know, everybody has their own reasons why they do the things they do, what their definition of success is. Personally, one of the reasons why I was drawn towards optometry is the autonomy of it, the ability to control your life, to be in control of your destiny, to decide when to do things, how to do things. And like I said, and I have nothing against anybody who decides to go any other direction, whether you go into, like what you were saying, research, corporate, academia, you know, into some kind of medical OD, MD practice. And I mean, whatever works for you, whatever you want to do, you know, you should definitely do it. And I definitely don't judge anybody else who does anything differently. But for private practice, I'm really drawn towards it just because, you know, the autonomy of it and the idea that, you know, I can be the type of clinician that I want to be. You know, I mean, you hear enough doctors now talking about how bureaucracy is controlling their ability to practice. Insurance companies are controlling their ability to practice. So many people are just getting their hands in and dictating what you can or can't do as a clinician to help out your patients. And, you know, not that you can eliminate that when you go into private practice, but that's just less people basically telling you how to best handle your patients versus private practice. You can kind of do it the way that you feels best for them. Nobody else is really telling you. And like I said, you know, it's different here and there, and I'm not saying that you don't get that outside of private practice, but you know, like I said, to me, that it's the ultimate form of being able to do what you want to do versus what other people want you to do.
What's one piece of advice you would offer to your fellow students?
One piece of advice? Oh, I just gave you like 10 different things in the last 2 minutes there.
Well, pick the big one.
Okay. No, give you kind of like a twofer right here.
Okay.
One, it's never too early. For whatever you want to do, it's never too early. Just, you know, don't just think, I'll just figure it out when I'm a fourth year, or I'll figure it out when I'm a doctor. You know, it's getting started earlier, you know, in terms of establishing yourself, establishing your name, your brand out there, building relationships, that should be starting first. On the opposite end, it's never too late, right? A lot of people who are, I know some classmates who are, you know, in the same situation, are in the same place right now where they're a few months from graduation, where they realized, oh my God, like I don't actually know what I'm going to do a few months from now. Sure, I'll have my license, but I don't really know anybody. I don't really know where I'm going to practice, you know, and you know what? I mean, that's, you know, start now. You know, it's never too early, but on the other hand, it's never too late. So if it just clicked in your mind that, I need to do something, then just do it now. Do it now because you still have a little bit of time. Probably would have been better if you started earlier, but you know what? Can't do anything about that, but start now. Put yourself out there, you know, go figure out what's out there. Just start cold calling people if you have to. Start asking people if they, you know, whatever you can do, do it now. But because it's never too late, and like I said before, you never know that who knows who and what opportunities will open up just from starting one relationship with one person and how that can quickly grow.
Mm-hmm. What do you do for downtime? Do you have downtime?
Is there such thing? Is it? I don't. You know, I definitely don't probably have as much as I'd like to, but I'm sure that's kind of how everybody is, right? But honestly, downtime, you know, for the past few years has been mostly just been able to sit home, relax, spend time with my friends, go to the beach, things like that. Just, you know, I think it's important to, you know, while optometry is the career you decide to go in and you definitely want to put your all into it, you want to be able to have things going on outside of optometry. You know, like I mentioned, I do a lot of traveling now, but just anywhere local, if you can just get out of the optometry, go, like I said, go to the beach, go for a hike, things like that. I like, you know, spending a little bit of time outdoors. I don't know if you can tell right now, I'm pretty tan, but so I do like being outdoors, and being here in Hawaii is probably not going to help with that either.
Well,
but
I was just going to say, you're in Hawaii, and for how long are you going to be there?
I just got here today, so that means 3 months.
3 months, okay. So
yeah,
you have plenty of time to develop some other habits.
I'll take a crack at surfing. I mean, I've done it before and I'm terrible at it, but you know, we'll see after a few months here how that's going to be like.
Okay. Last question, and we inflict this on everybody. What's the craziest thing you've ever done?
I don't think I'm allowed to say that.
Oh,
no.
come on.
Okay, I got a little. I don't know if this is the craziest thing, but it's definitely the first thing that popped in my mind.
We'll go with that.
I don't know if you're going to publish this, but I'm going to tell you anyways. So this is an undergraduate. A few of my buddies, we were going out, and we're just driving on the freeway. And we're going about 70, 75. We're on a part of the freeway. And this is down in San Diego. It's part of the freeway where there's only two lanes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So and there's a car next to us going about the same speed. And all of a sudden, this car starts coming from behind us, coming in really fast. And it's like a red Porsche. He's going like 90 plus an hour, and he's right behind us. We're in the left lane. He's right behind us and trying to get around us, but he can't because there's only two lanes. So he's right up against us, high beams on, things like that. You know, we're just going to keep driving. You know, it's like there's nowhere for us to go, so I don't know. He starts backing off a little bit. And then they starts coming in closer again, and he jumps into the shoulder on the left to try to get around us, where it's a part of the shoulder where it's dirt, rocks, grass, things like that.
Right.
So I guess he loses control when he's kind of in there, and he slams up against the car on the left side, or against our car. And here's the best part. Right when this happens, this is where the freeway opens up into four lanes now. So had he had waited 10 more seconds, he could have just gone around, right? So he hit the car pretty hard, and we pull over on the right side there, and he pulls over on the left side. And first thing we do is we kind of take a look around. Oh my God, is everyone okay? Is, you know, anyone hurt? Everyone's fine. They're just a little shooken up there. And then this is where the stupid part comes in, right? We think, oh my God, this guy, we don't want him to get away. We should go make sure, you know, run over there and make sure he doesn't do anything, you know, and leave. Now, but I told you, we pulled over on the right side on the four-lane freeway. He's on the left side. So when you're kind of looking at that and you're thinking, okay, how wide is the lane? Like 10 feet, give or take. But wow, when cars are coming at you at about 80 miles an hour, those cars come fast. And I don't know what we were thinking. I guess, you know, you just have too much adrenaline in you, and we just didn't want this guy to get away. So we literally did like Frogger across the freeway there. It was crazy. So we get there. This guy's on the phone. And he just hands over his insurance and driver's license. He doesn't say a word. Cops come, take statements from everybody. And then he looks at us and he goes, wait a minute, where's your car? Right? And we're like, oh, it's over there. We're pointing across.
God.
He's like, wait, how did you get here if your car's there? Like, oh, we ran across the freeway. And he just looks at us and he goes, you guys are idiots. Like, are you kidding me? Like, so he had to call some other cops, and they had to stop the freeway, and we had to walk slowly across the other side. And so something that, you know, seemed like a great idea at the time, but I tell people I basically played a game of real life Frogger.
Live action, which, live action
Frogger. Don't ever do that. Don't ever do that. We weren't drunk or anything. We were just, I was young and dumb. A lot of adrenaline pumping through me, and but I'll tell you, those cars come fast. Luckily, no one was hurt, so at least we have a good ending to that story.
Okay, well, it was great talking to you finally, and that's all the questions I have for you today.
Yeah, no, definitely. No, it was great, like I said, great to finally put a face to the name, and glad we were finally able to get this thing going. I know it took a while, but it worked out, and I'm here in Hawaii, so I can't complain about anything right now.